Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Gwen.
Good day. Good day, Internet. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
Like, should I do it too?
No, well, you're the guest, so of course
we can all
have
do
to
it.
Wish you a good day first. That's only polite. Thanks for being here for Pixel Foldapalooza, everyone. I'm very excited about this. I'm very excited about my Pixel Fold. Who's excited to do the show?
Me.
Oh. I am enthused.
Wow.
It's Taco Tuesday, Tom.
For Roger.
What? Yeah. What could be wrong?
Exactly. All right, let's do it. Here we go. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks to every single one of you, including Adam Green, Dustin Campbell, Tim Deputy, and Douglas Thornburg. On this episode of DTNS, it's Foldapalooza. Shannon Morse and Android faithful Xuan Tui Dao are here, and we'll all compare our experiences with the Pixel Fold. Plus, Microsoft just gave its cloud gaming rights to Ubisoft, right? Yes, they did? Yeah, they did. Weird. We'll explain. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, August 22nd, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Sarah Lane, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Studio Colorado, I'm Shannon Morse.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And also joining us from Colorado, Xuan Tui Dao, Android developer and host of Android Faithful. Welcome.
Hey, DTNS crew.
Yay.
Good to
Hi,
have
neighbor.
You back.
Hi, neighbor. We just found out, Shannon and I just found out we're neighbors.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Like, they're roommates. They had no idea.
We got to talk about the toilet paper situation, Shannon. I mean, we got to have a meeting.
I'm
after,
sorry.
After the show.
Yeah, after the show. They'll take care of it. No problem. All right. We have some good stuff on the show today, so let's start right here with the quick hits.
At last, ARM filed for its expected IPO on Monday. I'm not going to do that anymore,
so
but
I'm
the chip
so
designer,
good.
More, please. The chip designer owned by SoftBank seeks a U.S. NASDAQ listing looking to trade under the ticker symbol ARM. That would be appropriate. After SoftBank's deal to sell ARM to NVIDIA fell through, SoftBank took ARM private back in 2016. So this is a long time coming.
Indeed. NVIDIA announced that DLSS 3.5 will arrive in the next few months and work for all RTX generation NVIDIA GPUs. It'll replace the denoisers in the graphics pipeline with machine-generated ray reconstructions. But the part you're really going to care about if you don't understand that is NVIDIA says it's going to improve performance and image fidelity. The Verge notes one of the first appearances of DLSS 3.5 will be in Cyberpunk 2077, which gets support with the release of the Phantom Liberty DLC on September 26th. It'll also be available in some editing apps like Chaos Advantage, D5 Render, and NVIDIA Omniverse to help improve render previews. Next on the docket, AMD's Fidelity FX Super Resolution 3, aka FSR 3, and everybody thinks we might hear something about that at Gamescom later this week.
Attention Excel users, Microsoft is bringing the popular programming language Python to your spreadsheets. A public preview of the feature is available today, letting Excel users manipulate and analyze data with Python. Stefan Kinnis-Grand, General Manager of Modern Work at Microsoft, says, "You can manipulate and explore data in Excel using Python plots and libraries, and then use Excel's formulas, charts, and pivot tables to further refine your insights."
Meta announced a large language model called Seamless M4T that it says can translate and transcribe between 100 languages, well, almost 100 languages, just about 100 languages, in both text and speech. So speech to text, text to text, etc. Meta released Seamless M4T under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License, and it also released the metadata of its Seamless Align translation dataset.
Meta also announced it will indeed launch a full web app for Threads, rolling it out over the next few days. Threads spokesperson Christine Pai tells The Verge that you'll be able to post, interact with other posts, and look at your feed. However, you won't get all the features available in the mobile app. Limitations include not being able to edit your profile or send a post to Instagram DMs from the web version. But web app functionality might boost engagement for those of us sitting behind a computer like I am right now to use Threads more often, but not during DTNS because I have to, I don't know. not do that. Also from Meta, Facebook and Instagram users in Europe will get the option to switch off personalized feeds before the Digital Service Act's August 25th deadline for compliance.
Ah, so this will be the last day I text myself what I want to write on Threads so that I can
still do that, Tom. You just now
I guess
have
I could.
More
You're
options.
Right. No, that's a good point. All right. Let's talk a little bit about this Microsoft craziness.
Let's do it. Okay, so back on July 19th, you might recall that the UK paused its investigation to have talks with Microsoft about restructuring its deal to acquire Activision Blizzard. Now we know what came out of these talks, or at least what has been shaken out of these talks. So Tom, let's walk through it.
Yeah, so to address the UK Competition and Markets Authority's concerns about cloud gaming, Microsoft has agreed, should the whole thing happen, to transfer cloud gaming rights to Ubisoft, the French company Ubisoft, totally not part of this otherwise, in perpetuity, mind you, for all current Activision Blizzard games and any games released by Activision Blizzard over the next 15 years. So everything in the pipeline now, and then anything that's released over the next 15 years, Ubisoft will have the cloud streaming rights. Ubisoft will pay Microsoft with the rights through a one-off payment and a market-based wholesale pricing mechanism. So they'll basically decide it once. There might be per-usage fees in there or something, but they're not going to keep adjusting it over time. Microsoft would then have to license cloud gaming rights back from Ubisoft for any games it wants to include in Xbox Cloud Gaming. Ubisoft has already announced that when this happens, should it happen, it will bring those titles to its own cloud gaming service, Ubisoft Plus, which is available on a lot of other cloud platforms like Amazon's Luna, for example. Microsoft must also adapt games to run on non-Windows platforms for cloud streaming purposes, because some cloud streamers don't use Windows to stream their games. But that might have a downstream effect if they have to make a game portable to some other operating system. Different rules, however, will apply in the EU. This applies to everywhere outside the EU. In the EU, Microsoft already has a deal in exchange for an agreement to let users in the EU stream all current and future Activision Blizzard games through any cloud game streaming service of their choice. So there's a broader deal already in the EU. It was going to be worldwide, but then they changed it for the UK CMA, so the rest of the world doesn't get that deal. Only the EU gets that part of the deal. The UK has given itself a new deadline to investigate this new agreement of October 18th, which is also the new drop-dead deadline for this merger to happen. Remember, they created a new penalty system with Activision Blizzard to give them a little more time. That was October 18th. The UK has until October 18th to approve this. And then, on a side note, Microsoft also announced today that PC Game Pass is coming to NVIDIA GeForce Now starting August 24th, which is one of the things it had promised to do in order to prove it was going to be a good citizen as it put all this together. But kind of convoluted, huh, Sarah, to do all this, but it, an innovative approach, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, when I first, you know, woke up and saw this news, I was like, oh gosh, you know, the whole cloud gaming thing had been a point of contention with, you know, with the UK CMA, but a lot of people were saying, but I mean, is it really a point of contention right now? No, but perhaps in 5, 10, however many years, it could be. So, you know, and again, as you know, as I looked through it, I was like, okay, it's not that Microsoft, you know, can't, you know, do anything with Activision Blizzard games in the cloud. It just can't be exclusive. And that makes perfect sense. And hey, you know, the UK is, what, the better part of 2 months to sit and think about this? I think this is probably going to be a deal that goes through.
It feels like Microsoft wouldn't have come out with this from talks with the CMA if there wasn't a likelihood that the CMA was going to approve. But the CMA was quick to say, we haven't greenlighted this. We are beginning the new investigation of this right now. So they're dotting their I's and crossing their T's. I don't know. Shannon, what do you think?
Well, one of the reasons I haven't really gotten into cloud gaming so much myself is because I hate getting stuck in like one specific service or one specific platform or computer or operating system in order to be able to play said game. I like being able to use whatever is in front of me at the time, whatever console or whatever handheld. So it sounds like this will make it easier for consumers to be able to play Activision Blizzard games on whatever platform they prefer, right? That's kind of the gist that I'm getting.
That's certainly the idea.
This sounds good to me.
The folks who wanted to block this merger said, well, hold on a second. You know, this whole cloud gaming thing, you know, if Microsoft has it all under their control, too much, you know, this is a competition problem. So, yeah, exactly what you're describing, Shannon, is what that's the end goal, at least in writing.
It was going to be that way anyway with this EU part of the deal. It's just that the UK said we don't almost said we don't trust you and said we don't want Microsoft to be in charge of that, even if they're promising. We want it to be in another company's control. So they decided to just hand that over to Ubisoft. I'm very curious about the backstory of how that came about too.
And how does Sony feel?
Ooh.
Grumble.
Just grumble. Yeah, they're over there like, fine, I guess they're just going to do it.
Yeah, I guess they'd acquiesce. We'll live with it.
That's Sony.
That's Sony. This is what they sound like.
Yeah. Now to Sarah with weather.
Yeah, truly. IBM announced that it will sell its weather business, The Weather Company, to private equity firm Francisco Partners, which is at least said it will operate it as a standalone company / app. In a joint statement, both companies within the sale said that The Weather Company wants to move beyond just forecasting the weather and offer new tools for health and well-being, because the weather is often a part of all of that. Now, if you're saying, hold on a second, The Weather Company, The Weather Channel, what are we talking about here? Little history. IBM acquired the apps and websites of The Weather Channel and Weather Underground back in 2016. In fact, the deal was announced in 2015, went through in early 2016. The Weather Company is a weather forecasting and IT company that owns and operates weather.com, which is the website for The Weather Channel, but not the TV channel itself, and also Weather Underground. The Weather Company, so that's sort of the overall umbrella of all of this, has been a subsidiary of the Watson and Cloud Platform business unit of IBM since 2016, since IBM acquired it. Prior to IBM, though, The Weather Company was owned by a consortium, including Blackstone Group, Bain Capital, NBC Universal, so the first two private equity companies. That consortium still owned the Weather Channel cable network until March of 2018, when it was sold to Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios. So completely different deal, but understandably a little confusing to a lot of folks.
Yeah, especially because they use the same logo. So the Weather Channel TV network licenses the logo and the right to point to the Weather Channel website from IBM. I guess they'll continue to license that from Francisco Partners, but the TV channel is still separate. Francisco Partners is interesting as a holding company. They own LastPass, MyFitnessPal. They have investments in LegalZoom and Grass Valley and Eventbrite and even Corsair. So
GoodRx, you know?
Yeah.
Getting into pharmaceuticals. I was not aware of this. I've heard of Francisco Partners, but, you know, there are a lot of PE companies, as you might see written down sometimes, that do a lot more behind the scenes than some of us realize.
I use the Weather Channel app. In fact, I used it quite a bit this weekend when we had a tropical storm.
Sure, yeah, of course. And
I found it to be one of the more reliable ones with the data. It's interesting to see IBM back out of it. IBM's really just trying to focus. So they still want to use the Weather Channel data. So they're still going to have an agreement with Francisco about that part of it, but they're just not going to operate the website anymore. So I suppose the data, as long as the data stays strong, it'll remain my favorite. I'm actually curious, what weather app do you use?
I used to use strictly the Google Weather app, but a good friend of mine, Dan Kim, and some compatriots created their own app called Hello Weather. So you got to use what your friends are doing.
Yeah. That's good. Now I want to use it too.
Nice. I love it. You're welcome, Dan.
Shannon, you use the Weather Channel too, right?
Yeah, I use Weather Channel, and I started using the widget that Google integrates into their Pixel phones, just because they have all the information that I need right there at my fingertips. So it makes it very easy, and it has all the information. And if there's anything additional that I need, I can just click into it, and it opens up weather.com.
Yeah, 85 degrees. It's right there on my home screen. Sarah, which one do you use?
Well, you know, for a long time I used Black Sky, and that was when Black Sky was independent before Apple bought Black Sky, and then it turned into something that it got spun out into something else. So right now, with the technology that Apple is using natively, just because my Apple Watch talks to the iPhone and, you know, I'm in the ecosystem, the weather system, as it were. So that's kind of what I use. Every so often, if I feel like, you know, for example, this has happened because the weather has been weird where I am lately, where it's like overcast, but not raining, but it might rain. You know, I look at my weather app, which is Apple's native weather app, and it'll be like light sprinkles, and it's not sprinkling. And I wonder, I don't know where you think it's raining. And so I'll check another couple. You know, I'll go back to Black Sky or, you know, just do some searches. But for the most part, I feel like this stuff is pretty accurate these days. You got your Doppler radar. You kind of know what's up.
Well, folks, let us know what you use. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Also, if you haven't checked out Tom's Top 5 lately, we've got a whole bunch of them now for you to watch. They're all bite-sized, just a few minutes long. The most recent one went up on Friday about the top 5 operating systems that failed. This is a tribute to these beloved operating systems that tried. They tried so hard. Some of them I really rooted for, too. If you want to know what they are, watch the video, youtube.com/dailytechnewsshow. All right, folks, Pixel Fold has been out for just about 51 days now. So we have convened three different types of users to assess what we think of Google's attempt to challenge Samsung as the foldable leader. Each of us are going to talk about what we use the Fold for and a little bit about some of the things that we have noticed. Wen, let's start with you. Oh, you're on mute, Wen. Sorry. There we go. That happens.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, so I've been using the Pixel Fold since I got it. I ordered it at Google I.O. because I was incredibly excited. And yeah, it's kind of amazing. This has pretty much been my main computing device. It's been with me everywhere. And what I think is super fascinating is that I was a Z Fold 3 and Z Fold 4 super fan until I met this device. And I was I was very much allured by this very usable front screen. I mean, obviously the Z Fold 4 and 3 have a lot of polish, but that front screen I really found unusable. And it's so cool that with the last 51 days, I'm finding myself using the front screen a lot more. I kind of expected to always be using the inner screen, but now having an actual, you know, front screen that you can type on is super valuable. And also, I think what's really cool about this, and this might get into my dev brain a little bit, is that the inner screen is actually landscape. The Z Fold 3 and Z Fold 4 is actually more square. I think it's like 6x5, but that is, I think what happens is that the inner screen becomes very tablet-like, and kind of in the traditional sense, we think of like folks using like an iPad or an S-Tab or something where you kind of have it in landscape mode, you watch your media, whatever. The fact that the inner screen is this landscape mode makes me feel like I am, in fact, carrying a tablet. So I open it up, I watch my YouTube videos, I watch DTNS, and it's all super comfortable. And from a dev perspective, I think it's really valuable, because a lot of us have been ignoring large screens for a long time. But the fact that, number one, with foldables being increasingly popular, and the fact that you have a single device that has both portrait and landscape, we have to pretty much confront whether, you know, we need to make an extra effort, you know, on both of these aspect ratios, or be okay with letterboxing, which is really apparent in landscape mode. So as a dev, I love that. And also, it's going to be important because Google Play Store is starting to take large screen compatibility, adaptability, you know, conformity into account with ranking. So I'm all for this, but mostly just to get all of us devs in line. And then finally, I love the specialized software. And I think that's something that has been really awesome. I think the thing that I show off most about this is the rear camera selfie, which is, I think, just part of showcasing what, you know, not just large screens, but this very weird, you know, folding device with multiple screens can show. And I think it's something that attracts like normal people. Like I love showing it off to, like, especially my iPhone using friends. And I've learned from a friend of mine that worked on the Pixel Fold that it will be a third-party API third-party available API. So all of us can start doing like cool shippy things. Yeah. I think it's still experimental, but I mean, especially with the drive foldables, I'm really hoping that this, like both this device, the fact that Google's doing it, because for devs it's important that Google does it first, and the fact that they are providing APIs for us to do cool stuff, It was super important. So yeah, sorry, that's a bit devy, but
No, that's great. I love the dev perspective. That's why we wanted to have, you know, different perspectives here. Shannon, do you have like a hacky perspective? How are you using the phone?
Not really. Like everything I've been doing recently has been about like making my workload as a content creator less so that I'm not as stressed out. And one of the reasons why I use my Pixel Fold every day is because I can do like multitasking on here. And to compare, like Wen said, about using the Fold 5 and the Samsung Z Folds, this one, I love the landscape mode because it looks so much easier to use, and it is so much easier to use whenever you're doing multitasking because you do have those nice big frames on both sides. So it's easier to read and it's easier to actually like type on the screen. And when you flip it the other way, you still have a really nice landscape. So you have that landscape up and down. So I'm able to do a lot of stuff where I'm like checking email on one side and adding things to my workload schedule on the other side. And it just makes life a lot easier. And it's just very compatible with like being a content creator. And not just that though, since I'm using this interior screen so much, I also noticed that the inner display camera on the folds, it's built under the display. So it kind of looks like a potato. I like to say that it's a potato and we need to stop building potatoes into phones, because they should be in stews and boiled and mashed and not in phones, because it looks like crap. Like it's 2023 and I hate that they put that camera in there. It drives me nuts as a content creator. When I'm doing something like I'm on Google Meet and I'm talking to my niece and my sister and my brother and we're doing like a group call, it's so much easier to use this inner camera because I can see everybody so nicely on this larger display as opposed to the outer display. Like, yeah, I could use the outer display and get that nice selfie camera, but this one is such a big screen and I want to be able to see them better. And I like having that larger display. So having an actual decent camera on the inside is huge for me, not just to take selfies, but to also talk to people all the time. And last thing has nothing to do with content creation, but I straight up went to the Renaissance Fair and I opened this and I threw it down on the ground in dirt and gravel and everything. And it landed face down with the folding screen on the dirt and the gravel. I know, I terrified
everybody. Were you mad? Was this an accident?
No, this was a, I really hope it doesn't break, but I'm going to do this because I'm testing it. I was reviewing it. I wanted to see if it would actually be durable because so many people were saying that it's not durable. And I was like, well, I'm going to test this because I want to do it like my own real life test. And if I'm taking this out, eventually it will fall upside down into dirt and gravel. And it's fine. It's totally fine. I wiped the thing off. I don't hear any gravel in the hinge. The hinge is really, really nice. So I would say that this is a very durable phone. I mean, yeah, treat it nice because it's a piece of tech. Don't bend it backwards. Like, don't do those things to your pieces of tech. But overall, it's a great device. I'm really happy with it.
All right, I'll finish up. I should point out that this is my second phone. I have an iPhone as well that I run, so I'm not using it all the time. But I generally have two phones going at once. And I will say folding has become normal. I don't think of it as a cool thing anymore. It's just a thing that a phone should do. And I sometimes look at my iPhone as the small phone, even though it's a Pro, even though it's a Pro Max, because I can't unfold it. It's just got the one screen. So it's been amazing to me how quickly this just became a thing that is a function that I want and need and don't think of as weird. The fingerprint sensor is a little awkward in some orientations. It's a minor downside, but like if you have the hinge horizontal and then it locks and you're holding it to the sides, you have to kind of either turn it again or kind of weirdly put your fingerprint down there. So if you're using the fingerprint sensor, that's kind of a minor inconvenience. That's kind of the worst I could come up with, honestly. I'm very glad that it passed the Renfair dirt test because I still don't have a case for mine yet. And I'm definitely afraid that it's going to cause me pain at some point. So I'm going to have to get a case, but I haven't needed it. I've been going for 50 days with it, and it's been fine. So far, so good. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more in Good Day Internet about our foldable experiences, so patrons stick around for that. But before we get to the end of Daily Tech News Show, Sarah's got a hot new car to tell us about.
I do. If you've got the coin, you might be interested in Lamborghini's new Lanzador. It's an all-electric departure from the two-seated sporty profile that the luxury brand is pretty much known for. Now, the Lanzador is different. It has floor-mounted battery packs, two of them, to power the car's two electric motors, which offer a peak output of over 1 megawatt. Now, when someone told me that, I said, is that a lot? And they said, yeah, it's equivalent to like 1,300 horsepower. And I said, is that a lot? And they said, yes.
Imagine 1,300 horses. That's
all pulling you at once. Very powerful. If you ask how fast it can go, Lamborghini's kind of mum on details like range, battery, charging capacity, acceleration speeds, all things that someone would want to know before they got into a car like this. But the company already has a more utilitarian SUV called the Urus. So if you're looking for that in the Lamborghini line, you might be familiar with that already. The Lanzador seems to be sort of a hybrid of that supercar and the soccer family fun boat of sorts. The company also says the design was inspired by a spaceship. So if it looks like a spaceship, well, they did their job.
Yeah, it's got lots of glowy red lights. They haven't said exactly what all of them are.
I feel
are,
like but, yeah. Modern cars all look like spaceships.
They kind of do, yeah.
You know, at least the interior. But yeah, a friend of mine who is a bit of a car nut, you know, I was like, you know, it's 1,341 horsepower or the equivalent. He was like, that's ludicrous. That's insane.
Yeah.
And I'm using terms that like Tesla has already adapted. So, you know, it's like we've all used all the terms. I was like, well, like how crazy is it? And he's like, my car is really fast and it's about half of that horsepower. Like it's like insanely fast speeds that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, from 0 to 60 type stuff, you know, yeah. The pickup is,
I have a
is,
feeling my Honda
it's
Civic
a pretty
is
big deal.
Not anywhere close to that. So,
yeah, my Volvo is, it's a comfy, but not a punchy ride. Mm-hmm. Don't think we have 1300 horses in that car.
Indeed. Well, if anyone picks one up, let us know how it goes.
Yeah. Once hope you have a good ride.
Because it won't be any of us. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
This one comes from somebody who did not want to be named, but said in response to our conversation yesterday with Justin Robert Young about election workers and their experience with voting errors. This person works with voting machines on elections in the state of Georgia in the U.S. They said, we ask every voter if they've reviewed their ballot before scanning. As for what Justin said, it is correct. One vote isn't going to catch attention. But if we noticed a lot of people with the wrong person on the ballot, based on what they told us beforehand, it would raise some alarms. Surprisingly, we've had very few people who accidentally choose the wrong candidate. This is part of our training, and our county is aware of voter awareness of hacking as well.
We thank you for sharing that experience, because that answers a bunch of questions we had, especially if you're a patron and you listened to the end of Good Day Internet yesterday. We were talking a lot about, like, here are the things we want to know. We want to know, do people look at their ballot? Are they told to look at their ballot? What happens? How many people does it take before they start to get suspicious? And this person very bravely, I think, helped us to understand that. So thank you, person, yeah, for sending that to us.
Indeed. We always love your feedback, whether it's something that we've talked about in a previous show or might talk about on a future show. Do send our feedback our way. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Wen Tui Dao and Shannon Morse, thank you so much for being with us today. Wen, we'll start with you. Where can folks find you when you're not with us?
Well, actually today you can find me right here in a few hours. I do host the Android Faithful podcast, which is recorded live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And if you are an OG fan of Ron and Mai's previous podcast, All About Android, you want to tune in tonight. Tune in tonight. We got something special. I'm gonna say no more. Just tune in.
Well, that is what we call a plug, a tease, a promo. but don't miss it. Well, we're glad to have you on the show with us, bringing the knowledge, especially about foldables today. You too, Shannon Morse. Let folks know where they can keep up with your latest.
YouTube.com/ShannonMorse, just like my name is spelled. I recently did a couple of tutorials about Google products. I did one on Google Meet, if you've never used it before, and also one about RCS versus iMessage and the kind of privacy implications, since those two don't really talk to each other. So definitely check that out if you're interested in privacy and text messaging.
Patrons, stick around for the extended show Good Day Internet. We're going to continue to compare notes on foldables and speculate a little on when and how Apple might get into the foldable game.
Just a reminder, we do the show live Monday through Friday, and you can catch it live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back doing it all again tomorrow with Scott Johnson joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
I hope you have enjoyed this program.
Almost exactly 30 minutes. 30 minutes and 4 seconds.
Oh, good job.
Is that why Diamond Club came in early?
It is.
Just
maybe I can do it.
Just to see if you can make it perfect.
Technically.
I get it.
Good job, everybody.
No, I get it.
Yeah. It was a little too early, but and it didn't even work. But it's like, I should have just faded it out right at 30.
I mean, trust me, there are times, especially like daily tech headlines, for example, not so much the show just because it's a team effort, but sometimes... because we always tell people it's about 5 minutes, you know, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, but when it's exactly 5.
I know. I don't know why. There's something about it, right?
There's something about it. It just makes you feel good, even to the point where I'm like, it's 5:03. Okay, let me cut out a breath. I'm gonna make this thing 5, even if no one cares. Yeah. I care.
It's just it's not like we need it to be exactly 5 minutes
or no
need
it, to it be doesn't exactly 30 matter
minutes. It's just fun.
There's symmetry.
All right,
I don't know.
let's anything else that you were thinking of that you wanted to work into the foldable conversation that you didn't get to say?
I'd just say amen to what Shannon said about potato cameras, because that was like one of the most annoying things about the Z Fold. I was just sitting here just nodding. You couldn't see me because I was, you know, like in the back of the studio, whatever, StreamYard. But I was just like this, because it is kind of ridiculous. And I know it's kind of funny how, I guess maybe polled is, how much do people care about bezels, I guess? Or I guess
I don't know. I feel like bezels is one of those like social media arguments where everybody's like, let's just pile on, guys, and let's hate on bezels. But honestly, I feel like bezels are a well-needed piece of technology, so that it gives you a little bit more protection. Mm-hmm. It offers you like a very, very specific space that you can put a camera in if you don't want to have a notch in the screen, like kind of bumping out into the screen. So there's a lot of reasons that bezels should be there. I don't mind them. And maybe that's just because I'm an oldie or something. I don't know. I'm a bit of an old fart, but
in fact, I don't see them.
I don't really see them either.
They're not like a thing I need to use or touch or, you know, I also don't care about notches.
Yeah,
there are just same. There's things where I go, I don't look at it. Is this something that's really bothering you on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. If so, then you're going to be like super pumped about the next version of your beloved phone that has a thinner bezel or no bezel at all.
Sometimes you need the bezel to be able to pick up the phone without activating something on the screen.
Very true.
Yeah. And even so, it's sort of like, I don't know, I liken it to televisions that used to have big frames, and now, you know, it's no frame at all, or the tiniest frame, you know, the bezel thing.
Oh my God, they're so fragile now.
I know, yeah, I have to be really careful.
And it's like, it does look like cool and modern, and kudos to, you know, clearly companies are spending lots of, you know, R&D on figuring out how to, you know, minimize that bezel, get it from 2 millimeters to 1 kind of stuff. And I like I reap the rewards. We all do.
Yeah.
But I also just don't, I don't know. I'm not sitting here like stewing about bezels.
Yeah. If anything, like I'm focusing more on the usability of the product, and a large bezel is not going to affect the usability of the product for me. The things that really matter are going to be like the cameras, because I'm a content creator, the speed of processing, mm-hmm. so I can edit videos on the thing, and like the battery life.
Yeah,
like those are really major features for me, major components. And if a product doesn't have those, have put a lot of consideration into those components, then it's probably not going to be something that I want to use or that I'll pick up every day.
You know, when you all were talking about the what you like particularly about you know, the foldable design, you know, and I don't have one, so I kind of just listened. I mean, it sounds so much like the same reason that I like my laptop, and also the same reason that I don't carry a tablet around with me everywhere, because it doesn't fold into a nice little spot, you know, to kind of go inconspicuously into a small handbag or even a pocket type thing. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it sounds like, especially with multitasking and being able to do, you know, a few things at once, people go like, yes, that's why a larger screen size works so well. And this is the only one that is truly mobile in a way that nothing else is. You simply can't do what you're talking about on that one tiny screen. Like you said, Tom, even your, you know, iPhone Pro Max, whatever version it is. I have the 13. You know, it's like, I mean, seems kind of big. It's not big enough to do something that would be along the lines of what Shannon was going through earlier. It just isn't.
It just gets mm-hmm. eaten up.
So there you go.
No, it's... And yet, I identified with what you were saying, Juan, about realizing that I could just use the front screen. Like, there was a moment mm-hmm. when I started to be like, oh, you don't have to unfold it just because you can, you know? And I started to realize how it works just like a phone when you don't need the big screen, when you just want to do something really fast. I don't know. I haven't really got to play with the Flip much. Eileen has one, but I feel like this is more useful when folded up than some of the Samsung stuff because of the limitations. I know you can hack it and stuff, but this really does just feel like a phone when it's closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Looks like it too.
Mm-hmm. You can actually type on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like on that outside display, which is so nice.
Yes.
Like, I know that you can, you know, stick Google's keyboard on your fold, on your Samsung fold if you wanted to, but You can't expand the physical size of the screen on the front. Like there's no way, unless you break your phone, you can't expand that. So like you're very stuck with a limited spec in terms of width. So having a larger front screen, it just makes it so much more usable. It makes typing easier. It makes it easier to see what you're doing.
Yeah, actually, Shannon, when you talked about the multitasking and the multi-window, I use multi-window quite a bit. And even with the Z Fold 4 and 3 when opened up, when you do multi-window, then you have two skinny screens instead of just one, and so you can multitask, but then obviously all the content gets very, very, very squished. So it's there's like a lot of utility there, but there really is something to be said where, sure, multi-window, but each window needs to be usable to some extent. And actually, yeah, I think both of us have like a whole bunch of alternate foldable form factors. And I'm really interested in the Z Flip 5. I literally got it yesterday, so I haven't played around with it too much, but I'm kind of curious how, when I start using this, how the flex window will, like what kind of things I do with the flex window that I don't do with the more usable like Pixel Fold, but we shall see. We'll see, but maybe there's a foldable for everybody, I guess. I still kind of like this one. I started using the Razer Plus last weekend, and then partly my fault because I didn't set up, but also partly because, again, this is more fully functional. I was like, I'm going to put my Ethernet back, or I'm going to transfer Google Fi back to my real phone and start using it. So
the Pixel, right? Being the one that
Pixel,
you're,
yeah, the Pixel yeah. is my real phone.
It's just, it's a good phone. Okay. So given all the things that we have collected that we like about these different foldables, what do we guess Apple would come with? And I feel like we're still a couple of years from them even trying it. I think they will, but I think they'll wait another cycle or two.
Would they do a, I mean, isn't the rumor that they're doing a foldable iPad as opposed to a foldable iPhone?
Yeah, that's one of the more reliable things out there. I can't remember if it was Mark Gurman from Bloomberg or someone else, but it was somebody who had a good track record saying that it might be a foldable tablet first before they go into the phone, which I don't know if I need.
I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
But then again,
I because it's like it's everything you like about a tablet, mm-hmm. but form factor is up to you.
And it becomes for the people Ooh. Who want the iPod Touch, it's like here, have a folded up tablet.
I mean, yeah, kinda.
Yeah.
We're gonna cover this. That's a spoiler, but so Samsung actually also low key is also working on a foldable tablet. I think they confirmed it somehow, like in a low key way. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of with you. I don't exactly know. I mean, maybe a foldable phone is a gateway to a foldable tablet, but I really don't think I'm a tablet person anyway. I think these make me a tablet person. I don't know if it's going to go the other way around, but we'll see.
You do a lot of work on your Pixel Fold, right? Is that still
I do.
True?
Yeah, I do. And it's actually funny. I really like it for that. And I've had a couple other dev friends say that, you know, kind of one of the things about dev, specifically Android, is that you need to have a lot of different devices for different cases, different versions of Android, different aspect ratios. And I mean, it's not like it covers a lot, but the fact that you have both portrait and landscape in one device is pretty handy. So I love keeping this plugged mm-hmm. in and just using it. It doesn't quite cover everything, but yeah, it is really valuable in that way. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if the difference between a foldable tablet and a foldable phone is that you can't make calls, like what is the difference otherwise?
Does
it just,
use their phone?
I mean,
the phone?
Do you
also
do it?
Like? I mean,
do you call people? What is that?
I know. Yeah, I don't.
You also can. You can call somebody without a phone. It's
the difference
pretty
is
easy.
You don't yeah. get the scam
really
likely
want to.
Alert. Yeah, I guess it could be a mini tablet folded up, and then a bigger tablet when you need it. There's. Probably
but isn't a phone a mini tablet?
Well, no.
It's like,
I'm thinking
what's
like,
a mini tablet?
Like iPad mini, right? Like
okay.
that size.
Yeah, sure.
And then you
okay.
could unfold it to become like a 17-inch tablet or something.
I guess, you know, for all of you, you understand because, you know, you've played, but and lots of our audience has as well. Like, oh, okay, I see where having the phone that can expand into something larger is a huge win. You know, more than a party trick type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how many, and maybe I'm in that other camp of people being like, eh, my phone screen is fine. I actually don't have my phone with me, you know, or I'd hold it up right now. It's like, it feels pretty big to me. But the idea of having something that's tablet size that can fold down, that's a selling point to me. And both are true, right? It's like, that's the beauty of the foldable. It's like, what do you want? You want the little, you want the big, you get both.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I like the idea of the portability of a tablet that folds down. Like, that would yeah. be very useful to take with me on, like, weekend trips and stuff where mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need a laptop, but I would like to have a larger screen just to do, you know, simpler work tasks. Productivity tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so Apple. They would have no front screen. But they yeah. would have developed a seamless hinge somehow, right? Where you don't have any kind of.
You're not supposed to have a front screen, Tom, so that you can yeah. meditate.
Yeah, exactly. When it's closed, it's closed. It's not going to bother you.
Yeah,
you're going to love it.
It just doesn't work.
It just doesn't work when it's closed.
I don't know if the price point works out, but I wonder if there's something also for like education or like students or creatives where. You know, like I know like the iPad Pro is like, you know, gigantic and wonderful and awesome for creative stuff, but it is large. It feels like the student thing doesn't really cross over because the price point is just, I assume a foldable iPad would be ridiculously priced, just like the foldable phone would be. But
yeah,
yeah, like a niche market.
That is the biggest problem with all these foldables is they're too expensive. Even the Flip
yes.
is pretty expensive at $995 or whatever.
Right? They're too expensive.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm able
because
to get them
it
is because I'm trading in
like,
phones.
You know, I mentioned party trick. It's like, clearly it's more than that, but it's mm-hmm. like, ooh, you get two sizes in one or multi-size, you know, that you get more than one device at a time. that's the selling point. So it's like, well, and you would pay a premium for that. I wonder at what point we get to the point where it's like, remember when we used to buy tablets and phones and mini tablets?
Yeah.
And like they all sold? I don't think we're far from the that point.
The rollable is still out there as a possibility.
Rollables. Yeah.
Rollable, foldable. The ruffle.
Just unscroll it, you know.
Oh, the rollable. Yeah, gosh. CES. Well, only a few months away. We'll probably see more rollables.
Yeah. Because I actually, now that I've got the foldable in my life, I love the idea of just opening it up when I need it. But I still imagine that just being able to make it whatever size you want, whenever you want, could be great without have, you know, without even being limited to two, because you could unscroll it.
Mm-hmm. And then the crease naysayers won't have anything to say either, no crease.
That's what Apple's going to do, a scrollable. That's how they get their no crease stuff. Just make
I don't even know
bigger.
If I want a scrollable. What I would
I
like though
either.
Is
no.
What I would like is to have a phone that's the size of the Flip 5 that slides upwards into a full thing instead of folding out like this. It slides up.
Mm-hmm. Like T-Mobile Sidekick style?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Sidekick style, but it's all but it's all screen.
Yeah.
Like all hardcore screen, like all one piece too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they would do that, but
well,
maybe
that would
involve some kind
of
scroll.
But then you'd lose that quarter frame. Right? Because what you get now is you've got that, but then you fold it out, and then you've got the innards. If it just scrolled up, it would just be the... I don't know. I might be overthinking this.
Mm.
They all seem like a win over just one screen.
I'm trying to imagine what I want in my hand. I'm like, this is how I...
I do find that I play, and I don't play a lot of mobile games, but I do play what mobile games I play on the Pixel. Like I will seek out, if it's not in the same room, I'm like, oh, I want to play that game. Let me go get my Pixel. Like, and that's.
And do you play it on the folding interior screen?
Yeah, totally. So Skyforce, I don't know if you know Skyforce. I play that all the time.
Starfleet Command,
yeah,
the Star Trek game.
That's a good one.
Or Star Trek Fleet Command.
Yeah, because you just get... That's when I run into it going to sleep on me, and then I'm like, oh, I have to go down there to get the thing. But because, you know, you play it like that, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, it fills the frame. My mobile game of choice is Polytopia, which is like a turn-based strategy game. And the one thing is like, oh, well, of course, it's taking forever to boot up now that I'm saying something. I am having trouble with the letterboxing just being very... Hold on. You can kind of, you don't have to see too close, but the letterboxing is very inconsistent.
Yeah. It kind of
like
goes...
so there is a button, of course, if y'all aren't familiar with Pixel Fold, there is this little button in this corner where you can just be like, no, full screen it, please. And force screen it. It does usually, especially for games, force a restart, which I usually don't have the patience for.
Yeah.
And I'm covering my mic, but there is something about the letterboxing that is, yes, you can just see it. It's very inconsistent. Sometimes the letterboxing,
oh
my Lord, excuse
just
me.
Back
I am,
and forth, back
I
and
apologize
forth.
To the live stream.
Yeah,
I will put that away.
Put a flashing
in case anyone...
thing. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Jeez.
I love the Polytopia game. And I love y'all devs on it, but I think there's like these weird edge cases like this that we, not Google, we need to figure out, or at least kind of snap attention to.
It is still pretty early in figuring out.
It is.
I try to give some patience for that. Do you get people asking you what phone you have when they see you open it?
Yeah.
It's still
do.
In that stage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
People, they're familiar with the idea. And I think a lot of that is because of Samsung's marketing more so than Google. So they know that these folding phones exist, but they're still so highly priced and so expensive that a lot of people haven't gone out and purchased one because they're unsure. Like they're like, oh, well, so a big question I see from people is, do you have any problems with the folding screen, or like has the folding screen died, or like have you noticed anything weird with the folding screen? So they're very concerned about the durability of the folding screen is the gist that I get from people who are not surrounded by these phones all the time.
Yeah, the first week or so that I had this, I was always gingerly opening it, like, you know, worried I was going to crack it in half or something. But
no, not I dumping it in the dirt. Yeah.
I still don't have the bravery to do that.
Come on, Tom, do it.
It's like a TikTok challenge. All right, I'll do it with you.
I figured for me, it was like either it would survive and everything would be fine, and then I could talk about that in my review, or it would die immediately or like crack or something, and then my video would go viral and hopefully pay for a new one. So I was like, okay.
Well, it'd be better if it had cracked. But yeah, I found it to be, you know, there was that Ars Technica one where they got one little piece of dirt in the wrong place and it died within a couple of days. But that does not seem to be typical of this.
It doesn't.
They do seem to be pretty durable.
I do panic though now reading Ron's review and hearing about like just a little speck of dust. And I think I definitely was very, very carefully, like meticulously cleaning out that little gap and like hoping. And now like about 51 days later, just messy, just eating chips and with my Pixel Fold. So with caution has gone to the wind now. I was like, it's fine now. 51 days, we're good.
Oh yeah, I have so much dirt in mine. There's probably cat hairs and dog hairs and my hair.
Definitely dog hairs in mine for
what
sure.
What is that? What is that? Ew, it's disgusting.
Top five things found in Shannon's fold.
Oh no, we don't want to go there. No,
I don't have too much actually, and I don't know. Do you have a case recommendation? That's really the whole reason that I put together this roundtable is
so we can give you our personal recommendations. Yeah. What's the one I'm using? I'm using an extremely cheap case that I got off Amazon because it was the only purple one that I could find. So that's what I bought. I took it off for this video, but yeah, it works fine.
So it's just a cheapy case.
Yeah, it's just cheap. Yeah. Although I do recommend the Whitestone Dome screen protectors. Mm. Those are really easy to apply and it fits perfectly. So it covers every edge of the OLED panel.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so it's a really, really good screen protector. So I put that on the front, and then it also came with a lens protector, but I took that off because it was kind of annoying to clean. So it's stuck on the back of the case right now.
I need you to send me that screen protector because I used the Zag version, and while Zag has that nice but also plastic wasteful like guide that makes it relatively easy to place it, it does not go edge to edge. Which is annoying. But in terms of case, I'm rocking the official Google one, which has like a really nice, like soft touch feel. And it feels pretty cool. I've definitely dropped this and it's fine. The case is relatively fine. The Pixel is fine. I did for a minute try Casetify because they have a lot of like really awesome prints and it's all fancy. The one thing about that is that they actually give you adhesive strips to put in yourself into the case, which was not my favorite thing. No. And that wasn't compatible with the screen protector with the Zag because I think the front case folded over a little too much. So it was like actually pushing the screen protector up. So if you're super paranoid like me and want all the protection and all like the hockey gear on your phone, might not be a good idea. But I think the official Google one's been pretty good for me.
I just didn't.
That's good to hear.
After spending as much as I did on the, even with the Google Fi discount and the trade-in and everything, I was like, I don't want to spend another $60 on a case, but probably need to.
I will spend good money on a case if they make a case that has anime characters on it. But if there's no anime characters, then chances are I don't care. This was for my Flip 3.
Love it.
And it's a great case. Good. Like this is from Casetify too, and it didn't have the adhesive, but it does have rubber bumpers all along it, so it didn't slip off.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't have rubber bumpers for the fold.
They should do that.
Yeah, and they gave me three stickers, like three of like the, it's like very long, some probably like the same, the equivalent thing, but they gave me three of them. I was like, well, you obviously expect me to not do very well with putting this on, so you gave me two extras. So, and yes, I didn't do a good job. So I needed those extra. And that's the one thing I think is cool about this, the Flip 5 to go to another foldable, is that they are kind of leaning into the customizable and cute cases, which I don't know. There's something really appealing about that. My Flip 5 is yellow and I was like, oh, this is there's something that I do want to give Samsung credit for, like the marketing of it and making it fun and sexy and like, you know, trying to aim at like younger folks. Probably can't afford this still. Maybe, I don't know. I couldn't afford it when I was that age, but I don't know. I there's something really interesting about also the marketing and maybe how, you know, these
even
kind
their,
of
like welcome to the flip side commercials.
Yeah, it's very
whatever.
Cool.
You know, I'm like, you know what? Those are pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. Whoever did those campaigns. I like it.
They have a flip zone in Seoul. I think I saw those on X, whatever the site is. And I think it's some corner, I presume, near the Samsung building where they just had a big flip mural on the corner of a building. And I think it was like, welcome to the flip zone or something. It's like, yeah, they're really all in on this, but wouldn't be surprised.
Was that a temporary thing?
I think so, maybe. Oh, okay. I should have saved it, and I just thought, oh, that's really cute. But yeah, they're whoever is like writing the copy for all this.
Are you
having
making
a good
notes
old time.
For your trip, Tom?
I am, yeah, because I'm leaving. I'm going to spend 2 weeks in Seoul starting August 31st. So, anybody's got tips? I'll probably go to the Samsung building.
See if I can save it.
I mean,
I'm find that post.
Yeah, let's see what's there.
As we were all talking about cases, I've never had a phone case.
What?
But I've also broken every phone screen I've ever had. In fact, the phone that I have now, going on a year, no cracks. Crazy.
Really? This is a long, that's a long stretch.
Not gonna wish.
That's a good
stretch. It's a long stretch for me. At the same time, people go, but why not just use a case and this would never happen? I'm like, I don't know. It's a weird game of sorts kind of thing. But have you ever had a like anxiety dream where you've shattered your phone? Or your tablet, or your foldable, or whatever. I have those a lot. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe just getting a case would solve a lot of things.
Probably.
In my life.
Yeah.
Like the real life and the imagined.
It's like therapy.
For your phone
just
and
get
for
a
you.
Case, Sarah.
Case therapy.
And you think about this so much less.
We can and rest your case.
Just start reviewing cell phones all the time, and you will always have a backup phone, and you will never stress.
True.
People will send you cases.
True. Yeah. I actually, yesterday, I misplaced my purse, which is a tiny little the one I was using yesterday. It's really more of like a fanny pack. Couldn't find my phone. But I was like, well, I have my watch, and I've got my laptop. I think I'm good. And yeah, did work. Figured anybody messages me, I'll get it on my laptop, you know. I mean, yes, I need my phone eventually, but didn't find it till this morning. Not a big deal, turns out.
Wow.
I like that life. Can I have that life? I don't have that life.
Listen, I mean, it was a particularly quiet night. Not every night would have gone that way. But yeah, like this morning I used my watch to ping my phone, you know, where it goes like, burr, 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 burr.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, I honestly don't know. It's in here somewhere. And sure enough, it was like on the back of some weird door. I don't know why I put it there.
On the back of a door.
Just happened.
It happens. They just go there sometimes.
Well, you know, so sometimes you're just like, oh, wait, let me do one, you know, the nearest doorknob. And then the door's open, and you don't know what's behind it, and that's where my purse was with the phone.
I have, now that Ralph's takes Apple Pay and Google Pay, I have been able to leave the house with just my phone, forgetting everything else, and be fine. Usually what would happen is I would leave and I would get to Ralph's with a bag of groceries and I'd get to the front and they'd ring me up and I'd be like, oh, I only have my phone. They're like, do you use Kroger Pay? And I'm like, no. They're like, that's all right. No one uses Kroger Pay. But now they finally like caught up.
Yeah.
So I can get by with just the phone now.
They have a Kroger Pay? For about 2 or 3 years, I worked on the Kroger app for a long time, actually.
Oh,
Kroger
really?
Android app. Yeah. I did. Sorry, it was a little bit of a tangent, but they were doing in-store photo printing. So I did like a photo cropper, and they had this like really, really old SOAP-based API for sending all the information. It was the UI part, which is my thing, is fun. The having to send the pictures over was not fun. But then we actually got a field trip to a Kroger is it Grand Rapids that their headquarters are, to go to a store and to test it out. And we printed out way too many prints. But anyway, that's side story. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, because Kroger, they own so many brands, but they own Ralph's down here in LA. And it was like, you had to go download the Kroger app to sign up and then connect it to the Ralph's app. and I could never get my patience and it to match up to the point where it would work. So, yeah, I never did the Kroger Pay. So now I'm glad they're just like, yeah, we'll do just regular Google Pay, Apple Pay. We take them both. It's fine. It's all good.
I'm all in on the palm scanning these days.
Oh, really?
I mean, it only works at two places that I go to. Whole Foods, but also, and this might have something to do with the fact that the gym I go to is right next to the Whole Foods, which is sort of a pretty large Whole Foods where they do some testing and stuff. My gym, it's a Crunch gym, they've got palm scanning now. Really? I walked in there the other day and they were like, okay, so here's how you do it. And I'm like, already in the system. And
nice.
They were like, whoa, look at you, tech person.
So it's Amazon's then, right?
It is.
Because you're already in there. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Huh. It may just, I mean, they might be testing at this like one gym. But it might be more widespread. Or it might be in other places too. But some people are weirded out about it. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm cool. Scan my palm. And then I don't need my phone or my purse.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Untethered.
I am looking
really
at,
free.
I'm looking at the cutest Flip 5 cases on Amazon right now.
Oh, you went down goodness. The case rabbit hole.
I did.
All right. Well, we have to go down our own rabbit holes now. Thanks to everybody on Patreon who supports us, patreon.com/DTNS. You're not here. We're not here. So we really appreciate every single one of you who supports us. We also have a great crowd on Twitch, without which we not only wouldn't have Good Day Internet, DTNS, but we wouldn't have Android Faithful. So thank you all for being here. Barbstera, the Lucas Siwi for new followers. Gotham Heights for the 27th month, Windmill Steve for the 40th month, PC Milesy, Zoe Brings Bacon, Techno Mention, Brian M64, all giving us bits. El Deuterino followed us. Welcome. And Tizzy Ting back for the 33rd month. Good to see you. Don't forget, if you're watching live, come back right here. And in some ways, I literally mean right here to twitch.tv/goodday internet for Android Faithful at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain. Until tomorrow, everyone, have a good day.
Good day, Internet.